Chapter 2 Reparations. Then share thy pain, allow that sad relief. Ah, more than share it, give me all thy grief. Alexander Pope, Eloisa to Abelard.
The witch light that illuminated the great library seemed to be flickering low, like a candle guttering down in its holder, though Tessa knew that was just her imagination. Witch light, unlike fire or gas, never seemed to fade or burn away. Her eyes, on the other hand, were beginning to tire, and from the looks of her companions, she wasn't the only one. They were all gathered around one of the long tables, Charlotte at its head, Henry at Tessa's right. Will and Jem sat farther down beside each other. Only Jessamine had retreated to the very far end of the table, separated from the others. The surface of the table was liberally covered with papers of all sorts, old newspaper articles, books, sheets of parchment covered with fine, spidery writing. There were genealogies of various Mortmain families, histories of automatons, endless books of spells of summoning and binding, and every bit of research on the Pandemonium Club that the Silent Brothers had managed to scrape out of their archives. Tessa had been tasked with the job of reading through the newspaper articles, looking for stories about Mortmain and his shipping company, and her eyes were beginning to blur, the words dancing on the pages. She was relieved when Jessamine at last broke the silence, pushing away the book she had been reading, On the Engines of Sorcery, and said,
Charlotte, I think we're wasting our time.
Charlotte looked up with a pained expression.
Jessamine, there is no need for you to remain if you do not wish to. I must say, I doubt any of us was expecting your help in this matter, and since you have never much applied yourself to your studies, I cannot help but wonder if you even know what it is you are looking for. Could you tell a binding spell from a summoning spell if I set the two before you?
Tessa couldn't help being surprised. Charlotte was rarely so sharp with any of them.
I want to help, Jessie said sulkily. Those mechanical things of Mortmain's nearly killed me. I want him caught and punished.
No, you don't. Will, unrolling a parchment so old that it crackled, squinted down at the black symbols on the page. You want Tessa's brother caught and punished for making you think he was in love with you when he wasn't. Jessamine flushed.
I do not. Ugh, Charlotte, Will's being vexing.
And the sun has come up in the east, said Jem, to no one in particular.
I don't want to be thrown out of the Institute if we can't find the Magister, Jessamine went on. Is that so difficult to understand?
You won't be thrown out of the Institute. Charlotte will. I'm sure the Lightwoods will let you stay. And Benedict has two marriageable sons. You ought to be delighted, said Will. Jessamine made a face.
Shadow hunters! As if I'd want to marry one of them!
Jessamine, you are one of them. Before Jessamine could reply, the library door opened and Sophie came in, ducking her white-capped head. She spoke quietly to Charlotte, who rose to her feet. Brother Enoch is here, Charlotte said to the assembled group. I must speak with him. Will, Jessamine, do try not to kill each other while I am gone. Henry, if you could. Her voice trailed off. Henry was gazing down at a book, Al-Jazari's Book of Knowledge of Ingenious Mechanical Devices, and paying no attention whatsoever to anything else. Charlotte threw up her hands and left the room with Sophie. The moment the door closed behind Charlotte, Jessamine shot Will a poisonous look.
If you think I don't have the experience to help, then why is she here?
She indicated Tessa.
I don't mean to be rude, but do you think she can tell a binding spell from a summoning one?
She looked at Tessa.
Well, can you? And for that matter, Will, you pay so little attention at lessons. Can you tell a binding spell from a souffle recipe?
Will leaned back in his chair and said, dreamily, I am but mad north-northwest.
When the wind is southerly, I know a hawk from a handsaw. Jessamine, Tessa has kindly offered to help, and we need all the eyes we can get right now, said Jem severely. Will, don't quote Hamlet. Henry, he cleared his throat. Henry! Henry looked up, blinking. Yes, darling? He blinked again, looking around. Where's Charlotte? She went to talk to the Silent Brothers, said Jem, who did not appear put out of temper to have been mistaken by Henry for his wife. In the meantime, I'm afraid, that I rather agree with Jessamine. And the sun comes up in the west, said Will, who had apparently heard Jem's earlier comment. But why? Tessa demanded. We can't give up now. It would be just like handing the Institute over to that awful Benedict Lightwood. I'm not suggesting we do nothing, you understand, but we're trying to decipher what it is that Mortmain is going to do. We're trying to predict the future instead of trying to understand the past. We know Mortmain's past and his plans. Will waved his hand in the direction of the newspapers. Born in Devon, was a ship's surgeon, became a wealthy trader, got himself mixed up in dark magic, and now plans to rule the world with his massive army of mechanical creatures by his side. A not atypical story for a determined young man. I don't think he ever said anything about ruling the world, interrupted Tessa, just the British Empire. Admirably literal, said Will. My point is, we do know where Mortmain came from. It's hardly our fault that it isn't very interesting. His voice trailed off. Ah.
Ah, what?
Jessamine demanded, looking from Will to Jem in a vexed manner.
I declare, the way you two seem to read each other's minds gives me the shudders.
Ah, said Will. Jem was just thinking, and I would tend to agree, that Mortmain's life story is, quite simply, balderdash. Some lies, some truth, but very likely there isn't anything in here that will help us. These are just stories he made up to give the newspapers something to print about him. Besides, we don't care how many ships he owns. We want to know where he learned dark magic and from whom.
And why he hates shadow hunters, said Tessa.
Will's blue eyes slid lazily toward her.
Is it hatred? He said. I assumed it was a simple greed for domination. With us out of the way and a clockwork army on his side, he could take power as he liked.
Tessa shook her head. No, it is more than that. It is difficult to explain, but he hates the Nephilim. It is something very personal for him, and it has something to do with that watch. It's as if he desires recompense for some wrong or hurt they've done him.
Reparations, said Jem very suddenly, setting down the pen he was holding.
Will looked at him in puzzlement.
Is this a game? We just blurt out whatever word comes next to mind. In that case, mine's genuphobia. It means an unreasonable fear of knees.
What's the word for a perfectly reasonable fear of annoying idiots? Inquired Jessamine.
The reparations section of the archives, said Jem, ignoring them both. The consul mentioned it yesterday, and it's been in my head since. We haven't looked there.
Reparations? Asked Tessa. When a downworlder, or a mundane, alleges that a shadow hunter has broken the law in their dealings with them, the downworlder lodges a complaint through reparations. There will be a trial, and the downworlder will be accorded some sort of payment, based on whether they can prove their case.
Well, it seems a bit silly looking there, said Will. It's not like Mortmain's going to lodge a complaint against the shadow hunters through official channels. Very upset shadow hunters refused to all die when I wanted them to. Demand recompense. Please mail check to A. Mortmain, 18 Kensington Road.
Enough persiflage, said Jem. Maybe he hasn't always hated shadow hunters.
Maybe there was a time when he did attempt to gain compensation through the official system and it failed him. What's the harm in asking? The worst thing that could happen is that we turn up nothing, which is exactly what we're turning up right now.
He rose to his feet, pushing his silvery hair back.
I'm off to catch Charlotte before Brother Enoch leaves and ask her to have the Silent Brothers check the archives.
Tessa rose to her feet. She did not relish the idea of being left alone in the library with Will and Jessamine, who were bound to bicker. Of course, Henry was there, but he seemed to be taking a gentle nap on a pile of books, and was not much of a buffer in the best of cases. Being around Will was uncomfortable in most circumstances, only with Jem there was it bearable. Somehow, Jem was able to whittle down Will's sharp edges and make him nearly human.
I'll go with you, Jem, she said. There was something I wished to speak to Charlotte about anyway.
Jem seemed surprised, but pleased. Will looked from one of them to the other and pushed his chair back.
We've been among these moldering old books for days now, he announced. Mine beautiful eyes are weary, and I have paper cuts. See?
He spread his fingers wide.
I'm going for a walk.
Tessa couldn't help herself. Perhaps you could use an Eratzi to take care of them. He glared at her. His eyes were beautiful.
Ever and always helpful, Tessa.
She matched his glare. My only desire is to be of service. Jem put his hand on her shoulder, his voice concerned.
Tessa, Will, I don't think...
But Will was gone, snatching up his coat and banging his way out of the library, with enough force to make the doorframe vibrate. Jessamine sat back in her chair, narrowing her brown eyes.
How interesting.
Tessa's hand shook as she tucked a lock of hair behind her ear. She hated that Will had this effect on her. Hated it. She knew better. She knew what he thought of her. That she was nothing, worth nothing. And still, a look from him could make her tremble with mingled hatred and longing. It was like a poison in her blood, to which Jem was the only antidote. Only with him did she feel on steady ground.
Come.
Jem took her arm lightly. A gentleman would not normally touch a lady in public, but here in the Institute, the Shadow Hunters were more familiar with one another than were the mundanes outside. When she turned to look at him, he smiled at her. Jem pulled the full force of himself into each smile, so that he seemed to be smiling with his eyes, his heart, his whole being.
We'll find Charlotte.
And what am I supposed to do while you're gone?
Jessamine said crossly as they made their way to the door. Jem glanced back over his shoulder.
You could always wake up Henry. It looks like he's eating paper in his sleep again. And do you know how Charlotte hates that?
Oh, bother,
said Jessamine with an exasperated sigh.
Why do I always get the silly tasks?
Because you don't want the serious ones,
said Jem, sounding as close to exasperated as Tessa had ever heard him. Neither of them noticed the icy look she shot them as they left the library behind and headed down the corridor.
Mr. Bane has been awaiting your arrival, sir, the footman said, and stepped aside to let Will enter. The footman's name was Archer, or Walker, or something like that, Will thought, and he was one of Camille's human subjugates. Like all those enslaved to a vampire's will, he was sickly-looking, with parchment-pale skin and thin, stringy hair. He looked about as happy to see Will as a dinner-party guest might be to see a slug crawling out from under his lettuce. The moment Will entered the house, the smell hit him. It was the smell of dark magic, like sulfur mixed with the Thames on a hot day. Will wrinkled his nose. The footman looked at him with even more loathing. Mr. Bane is in the drawing room. His voice indicated that there was no chance whatsoever that he was going to accompany Will there. Shall I take your coat? That won't be necessary. Coat still on, Will followed the scent of magic down the corridor. It intensified as he drew nearer the door of the drawing room, which was firmly closed. Tendrils of smoke threaded out from the gap beneath the door. Will took a deep breath of sour air. and pushed the door open. The inside of the drawing room looked peculiarly bare. After a moment, Will realized that this was because Magnus had taken all the heavy teak furniture, even the piano, and pushed it up against the walls. An ornate gasalier hung from the ceiling, but the light in the room was provided by dozens of thick black candles arranged in a circle in the center of the room. Magnus stood beside the circle, a book open in his hands. His old-fashioned cravat was loosened, and his black hair stood up wildly about his face as if charged with electricity. He looked up when Will came in and smiled.
"Just in time," he cried. "I really think we may have him this round. Well, meet Tammuz, a minor demon from the eighth dimension. Tammuz, meet Will, a minor shadow hunter from Wales, was it?"
"I will rip out your eyes," hissed the creature, sitting in the center of the burning circle.
It was certainly a demon, no more than 3 feet high, with pale blue skin, 3 coal black burning eyes, and long blood-red talons on its 8-fingered hands.
"I will tear the skin from your face."
"Don't be rude, Tammuz," said Magnus, and although his tone was light, the circle of candles blazed suddenly, brightly upward, causing the demon to shrink in on itself with a scream.
"Will has questions, and you will answer them."
Will shook his head. "I don't know, Magnus," he said. "He doesn't look like the right one to me."
"You said he was blue. This one's blue."
"He is blue," Will acknowledged, stepping closer to the circle of flame. "But the demon I need, well, he was really a cobalt blue. This one's more periwinkle."
"What did you call me?" the demon roared with rage. "Come closer, little shadow hunter, and let me feast upon your liver. I will tear it from your body while you scream."
Will turned to Magnus. He doesn't sound right either. The voice is different. And the number of eyes.
"Are you sure?"
"I'm absolutely sure," said Will in a voice that brooked no contradiction. "It's not something I would ever, could ever, forget." Magnus sighed and turned back to the demon.
"Tammuz," he said, reading aloud from the book, "I charge you by the power of bell and book and candle, and by the great names of Samael and Abaddon and Moloch, to speak the truth. Have you ever encountered the shadow hunter, Will Herondale, before this day, or any of his blood or lineage?"
"I don't know," said the demon petulantly. "Humans all look alike to me."
Magnus's voice rose, sharp and commanding. "Answer me."
"Oh, very well. No, I have never seen him before in my life. I'd remember. He looks as if he'd taste good."
The demon grinned, showing razor-sharp teeth.
"I haven't even been to this world for, 100 years, possibly more. I can never remember the difference between 100 and 1,000. Anyway, the last time I was here, everyone was living in mud huts and eating bugs, so I doubt he was around."
He pointed a many-jointed finger at Will.
"Unless Earthkind lives much longer than I was led to believe."
Magnus rolled his eyes. "You're just determined not to be any help at all, aren't you?" The demon shrugged, a peculiarly human gesture.
"You forced me to tell the truth. I told it."
"Well then, have you ever heard of a demon like the one I was describing?" Will broke in, a tinge of desperation in his voice. "Dark blue with a raspy sort of voice, like sandpaper. He had a long, barbed tail." The demon regarded him with a bored expression.
"Do you have any idea how many kinds of demons there are in the void, Nephilim? Hundreds upon hundreds of millions. The great demon city of Pandemonium makes your London look like a village. Demons of all shapes and sizes and colors. Some can change their appearance at will."
"Oh, be quiet then if you're not going to be of any use," Magnus said, and slammed the book shut. Instantly the candles went out, the demon vanishing with a startled cry, leaving behind only a wisp of foul-smelling smoke. The warlock turned to Will.
"I was so sure I had the right one this time."
"It's not your fault." Will flung himself onto one of the divans, shoved up against the wall. He felt hot and cold at the same time,
his nerves prickling with the disappointment he was trying to force back without much success. He pulled his gloves off restlessly and shoved them into the pockets of his still-buttoned coat. You're trying. Tammuz was right. I haven't given you very much to go on. I assume, Magnus said quietly, that you have told me all you remember. You opened a Pyxis and released a demon. It cursed you. You want me to find that demon and see if it will remove the curse. And that is all you can tell me.
It is all I can tell you, said Will.
It would hardly benefit me to hold anything back unnecessarily when I know what I'm asking. For you to find a needle in... God, not even a haystack. A needle in a tower full of other needles.
Plunge your hand into a tower of needles, said Magnus, and you are likely to cut yourself badly.
Are you really sure this is what you want?
I am sure that the alternative is worse, said Will,
staring at the blackened place on the floor where the demon had crouched. He was exhausted. The energy rune he'd given himself that morning before leaving for the council meeting had worn off by noon, and his head throbbed.
I've had 5 years to live with it. The idea of living with it for even one more frightens me more than the idea of death.
You are a shadow hunter. You are not afraid of death.
Of course I am, said Will. Everyone is afraid of death. We may be born of angels, but we have no more knowledge of what comes after death than you do.
Magnus moved closer to him and sat down on the opposite side of the divan. His green, gold eyes shone like a cat's in the dimness.
You don't know that there is only oblivion after death. You don't know that there isn't, do you?
Jem believes we are all reborn. The life is a wheel. We die, we turn. We are reborn as we deserve to be reborn, based on our doings in this world.
Will looked down at his bitten nails.
I will probably be reborn as a slug that someone salts.
The wheel of transmigration, said Magnus.
His lips twitched into a smile.
Well, think of it this way. You must have done something right in your last life to be reborn as you were, Nephilim.
Oh, yes, said Will in a dead tone.
I've been very lucky.
He leaned his head back against the divan, exhausted. I take it you'll be needing more
ingredients.
I think old Mole over at Crossbones is getting sick of the sight of me.
I have other connections, said Magnus,
clearly taking pity on him, and I need to do more research first.
If you could tell me the nature of the curse.
No, Will sat up. I can't. I told you before, I took a great risk even in telling you of its existence.
If I told you any more,
then what?
Let me guess. You don't know, but you're sure it would be bad.
Don't start making me think coming to you was a mistake.
This has something to do with Tessa, doesn't it?
Over the past 5 years, Will had trained himself well not to show emotion, surprise, affection, hopefulness, joy. He was fairly sure his expression didn't change, but he heard the strain in his voice when he said,
Tessa.
It's been 5 years, said Magnus. Yet somehow, you have managed all this time telling no one. What desperation drove you to me in the middle of the night, in a rainstorm? What has changed at the Institute? I can think of only one thing, and quite a pretty one, with big gray eyes.
Will got to his feet so abruptly, he nearly tipped the divan over.
There are other things, he said, struggling to keep his voice even. Jem is dying.
Magnus looked at him, a cool, even stare.
He has been dying for years, he said. No curse laid on you could cause or repair his condition.
Will realized his hands were shaking. He tightened them into fists.
You don't understand.
I know your parabatai, said Magnus. I know that his death will be a great loss for you. But what I don't know,
you know what you need to know.
Will felt cold all over, though the room was warm, and he still wore his coat.
I can pay you more if it will make you stop asking me questions.
Magnus put his feet up on the divan,
Nothing will make me stop asking you questions, he said, but I will do my best to respect your reticence. Relief loosened Will's hands. Then you will still help me.
I will still help you.
Magnus put his hands behind his head and leaned back, looking at Will through half-lowered lids.
Though I could help you better if you told me the truth, I will do what I can.
You interest me oddly, Will Herondale.
Will shrugged.
That will do well enough as a reason. When do you plan to try again?
Magnus yawned.
Probably this weekend. I shall send you a message by Saturday if there are developments.
Developments. Curse, truth, gem, dying. Tessa, 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 Tessa.
Her name rang in Will's mind like the chime of a bell. He wondered if any other name on earth had such an inescapable resonance to it. She couldn't have been named something awful, could she, like Mildred? He couldn't imagine lying awake at night, staring up at the ceiling while invisible voices whispered, Mildred, in his ears. But Tessa. Thank you, he said abruptly. He had gone from being too cold to being too warm. It was stifling in the room, still smelling of burned candle wax. I will look forward to hearing from you then.
Yes, do, said Magnus. And he closed his eyes. Will couldn't tell whether he was actually asleep or simply waiting for Will to leave. Either way, it was clearly a hint that he expected Will to depart. Will, not entirely without relief, took it.
Sophie was on her way to Miss Jessamine's room to sweep the ashes and clean the grate of the fireplace when she heard voices in the hall. In her old place of employment, she had been taught to give room, to turn and look at the walls while her employers passed by, and do her best to resemble a piece of furniture, something inanimate that they could ignore. She had been shocked on coming to the Institute to find that things were not managed that way here. First, for such a large house to have so few servants had surprised her. She had not realized at first that the Shadow Hunters did much for themselves that a typical family of good breeding would find beneath them. Started their own fires, did some of their own shopping, kept rooms like the training area and the weapons room cleaned and neat. She had been shocked at the familiarity with which Agatha and Thomas had treated their employers, not realizing that her fellow servants had come from families that had served Shadow Hunters through the generations, or that they had had magic of their own. She herself had come from a poor family, and had been called stupid, and been slapped often when she'd first begun working as a maid, because she hadn't been used to delicate furniture or real silver, or china so thin you could see the darkness of the tea through the sides. But she had learned, and when it had become clear that she was going to be very pretty, she had been promoted to parlor maid. A parlor maid's lot was a precarious one. She was meant to look beautiful for the household, and therefore her salary had begun to go down each year that she'd aged once she had turned 18. It had been such a relief coming to work at the Institute, where no one minded that she was nearly 20, or demanded that she stare at the walls, or cared whether she spoke before she was spoken to, that she had almost thought it worth the mutilation of her pretty face at the hands of her last employer. She still avoided looking at herself in mirrors if she could, but the dreadful horror of loss had faded. Jessamine mocked her for the long scar that disfigured her cheek, but the others seemed not to notice, save Will, who occasionally said something unpleasant, but in an almost perfunctory way, as if it were expected of him, but his heart were not in it. But that was all before she had fallen in love with Jem. She recognized his voice now as he came down the hall, raised in laughter, and answering him was Miss Tessa. Sophie felt an odd little pressure against her chest. Jealousy. She despised herself for it, but it could not be stopped. Miss Tessa was always kind to her, and there was such enormous vulnerability in her wide gray eyes, such a need for a friend, that it was impossible to dislike her, and yet the way Master Jem looked at her, and Tessa did not even seem to notice. No, Sophie just couldn't bear to encounter the two of them in the hall, with Jem looking at Tessa the way he had been lately. Clutching the sweeping brush and bucket to her chest, Sophie opened the nearest door and ducked inside, closing it most of the way behind her. It was, like most of the rooms in the Institute, an unused bedroom meant for visiting shadow hunters. She would give the rooms a turn once a fortnight or so, unless someone was using them, otherwise they stood undisturbed. This one was quite dusty. Motes danced in the light from the windows, and Sophie fought the urge to sneeze as she pressed her eye to the crack in the door. She had been right. It was Jem and Tessa coming toward her down the hall. They appeared entirely engaged with each other. Jem was carrying something. Folded gear, it looked like, and Tessa was laughing at something he had said. She was looking a little down and away from him, and he was gazing at her, the way one did when one felt one was unobserved. He had that look on his face, that look he usually got only when he was playing the violin, as if he were completely caught up and entranced. Her heart hurt. He was so beautiful. She had always thought so. Most people went on about Will, how handsome he was, but she thought that Jem was 1,000 times better looking. He had the ethereal look of angels in paintings, and though she knew that the silvery color of his hair and skin was a result of the medicine he took for his illness, she couldn't help finding it lovely too. And he was gentle, firm, and kind. The thought of his hands in her hair, stroking it back from her face, made her feel comforted, whereas usually the thought of a man, even a boy, touching her made her feel vulnerable and ill. He had the most careful, beautifully constructed hands. "I can't quite believe they're coming tomorrow," Tessa was saying, turning her gaze back to Jem. "I feel as if Sophie and I are being tossed to Benedict Lightwood to appease him, like a dog with a bone. He can't really mind if we're trained or not. He just wants his sons in the house to bother Charlotte."
"That's true," Jem acknowledged. "But why not take advantage of the training when it's offered? That's why Charlotte is trying to encourage Jessamine to take part. As for you, given your talent, even if, I should say when, Mortmain is no longer a threat, there will be others attracted to your power. You might do well to learn how to fend them off." Tessa's hand went to the angel necklace at her throat, a habitual gesture Sophie suspected she was not even aware of.
"I know what Jessie will say. She'll say the only thing she needs assistance fending off is handsome suitors.
Wouldn't she rather have help fending off the unattractive ones?"
"Not if they're mundanes," Tessa grinned. "She'd rather an ugly mundane than a handsome shadow hunter any day."
"That does put me right out of the running, doesn't it?"
said Jem with mock chagrin, and Tessa laughed again. "It is too bad," she said. "Someone as pretty as Jessamine ought to have her pick, but she is so determined that a shadow hunter won't do."
"You are much prettier," said Jem.
Tessa looked at him in surprise, her cheeks coloring. Sophie felt the twist of jealousy in her chest again, though she agreed with Jem. Jessamine was quite traditionally pretty, a pocket Venus, if ever there was one, but her habitual sour expression spoiled her charms. Tessa, though, had a warm appeal, with her rich, dark, waving hair and sea-gray eyes that grew on you the longer you knew her. There was intelligence in her face and humor, which Jessamine did not have, or at least did not display. Jem paused in front of Miss Jessamine's door and knocked upon it. When there was no answer, he shrugged, bent down, and placed a stack of dark fabric, gear, in front of the door. "She'll never wear it," Tessa's face dimpled. Jem straightened up.
"I never agreed to wrestle her into the clothes, just deliver them."
He started off down the hallway again, Tessa beside him. "I don't know how Charlotte can bear to talk to Brother Enoch so often. He gives me the horrors," she said.
"Oh, I don't know. I prefer to think that when they're at home, the Silent Brothers are much like us, playing practical jokes in a silent city, making toasted cheese. I hope they play charades, said Tessa dryly. It would seem to take advantage of their natural talents. Jem burst out laughing, and then they were around the corner and out of sight. Sophie sagged against the door frame. She did not think she had ever made Jem laugh like that. She didn't think anyone had, except for Will. You had to know someone very well to make them laugh like that. She had loved him for such a long time, she thought. How was it that she did not know him at all? With a sigh of resignation, she made ready to depart her hiding place, when the door to Miss Jessamine's room opened and its resident emerged. Sophie shrank back into the dimness. Miss Jessamine was dressed in a long velvet traveling cloak that concealed most of her body, from her neck to her feet. Her hair was bound tightly behind her head, and she carried a gentleman's hat in one hand. Sophie froze in surprise as Jessamine looked down, saw the gear at her feet, and made a face. She kicked it swiftly into the room, giving Sophie a view of her foot, which seemed to be clad in a man's boot, and closed the door soundlessly behind her. Glancing up and down the corridor, she placed the hat on her head, dropped her chin low into the cloak, and slunk off into the shadows, leaving Sophie staring, mystified, after her.